Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riedel 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
Moin moin, welcome to another episode of the GFP. This evening we've got a trio of us on to discuss a little bit of ground hopping and some interesting developments in the fan scene of a certain Northern club and a certain Berlin club. So that should be exciting. But here to chat with me tonight are two boys I feel like I haven't seen on screen for a very long time. I also don't feel like I've hosted for a long time, so I'm probably going to be rusty here, so that's my excuse for this week. But firstly, we've got Roy, who must be in a good mood after Haasval's recent form. And I've also noticed, took me time today to notice that St Mirren are the dizzying heights of third in the Premiership. Where did that come from?
Morning, Colin. Yeah, I can't complain with my football and love for the moment. It's going very well. It's all good. All good at Haasval, all good at Simon, all good in general. Can't complain.
All I've got to say is the only way is down from now.
Thanks. Maybe for one side, but maybe not the other. We'll see which one's at the top come the end. Simon in Champions League is coming next year.
I'll certainly be keeping my eye on things. And we've also got Robert on, probably a slightly lower mood, as his beloved Crystal Palace lost the GFP derby to George's Chelsea. How do you feel about that?
I don't really care, to be honest. I don't really see it as much of a derby either. I think we've lost something like 10, our last 10 games against Chelsea, so it wasn't exactly a surprise either. It's always like what I always think about sometimes in British media, we talk about London derbies, like Palace against Fulham is a London derby. I don't think any Palace fan sees that as a derby. So there we go. It's been a pretty busy month on my end. Have a niece, have moved house in Hamburg, and here I am back in Holloft next to Roy. So some things change, but some things change stay the same all night.
Yeah, and once again, I'm faced with the prospect of watching both of you sitting on a couch facing me. Another job interview scenario, which makes me slightly uncomfortable. But
one of the employers has fallen out this time because George has been sacked. one more post to fill.
Sacked and killing time at the gym instead of being on the podcast. That's not what we like to see, but that's the final mention of George on this podcast. Firstly, we'll head to Niedersachsen, where Roy, I believe you spent some time over the weekend.
Yes, indeed. Yes. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but my roommate comes from the Wolfsburg area, and we had always said from the start that we should go and take in a game, because he's reasonable after Wolfsburg fan, not diehard, but goes when he can. And his dad's quite a big, been going since like Regina Liga times a long time ago. So I thought I may as well take in a proper experience of the Autostadt when I could, other than just going randomly and probably not enjoying it as much as you probably would. But yeah, very good experience, Colin.
I mean, the floor is yours. It doesn't always have. I mean, we're not. That isn't it. We're not moving on. I thought you were gonna. It doesn't always get the best reputation as a city. Like generally, the image that most people think of is the big chimney, the Volkswagen factory, but.
Because that's generally what's there, Colin. There's generally not much. Yeah, no, I was in the day before in the city as well, and there's like from a foreigner as well. Like it's just not. You can't imagine living there, for example. It's if you're there, yeah, you can imagine. It's mostly the small dorfs or the villages round about it that are their nice areas, but the city is just made for the industry, and it's made for the factories, and that's you can see that as soon as you go in. there's not really anything breathtaking in the city, which is a shame because it's like there's a nice community vibe in the city, and when you're speaking to people and things like that, especially when you're around about the stadium, there is a nice community vibe to it. But like the city, it's not somewhere you're going to recommend to anyone to go if they're planning anywhere nice to go and visit in Germany or even in the north of Germany either. It's just there's just not much to really see apart from the Altostadt.
I remember reading, I think it was actually in Halbfear that the city has quite a big Italian community from workers moving to work in the Volkswagen factory. Did you manage to pick up a nice pizza or anything from any restaurant?
No, I didn't spend that much time in the city, Colin, unfortunately. I didn't get to taste the Italy of Wolfsburg, or the Wolfsburg of Italy. Sadly not. But yeah, so no, I did not. I stuck to what I'll get into. And when we talk about the stadium, the very nice food options that were on offer in the Volkswagen Arena. But yeah, no, the city was cool, like, for, like, to see it what first time, but the rest, then... Like, it's cool to see it, as in, like, it's weird. Like, you know, you going into it, it's cool to see it. Like, you made a face there when I said that. It wasn't great, but it's, like, cool to see the Altostadt and cool to see, like, Volkswagen and stuff like that. But the rest of it's just, like, once you're there 5 minutes, the novelty wears off and you're thinking, God, this place isn't... But, yeah, it's not very nice.
It's like the pool when you're on
once
the...
Once
you're in, it's fine. The new catchphrase.
Once you've seen the Altostadt and the Italians,
it's gone. The novelty
you see them again.
But so
aside from the game that you went to, you did see Wolfsburg's old stadium, didn't you?
Yeah, so we took a drive. I had to go visit the university there for a quick moment, and we drove past the old VfL Stadion, which is quite cool. I believe it's still being used. Well, it was still being used when they had the second team, but that's obviously been dissolved the year before Corona or during Corona. I can't remember exactly when it was. And they've not. I think it's still used by underages and stuff like that. Like, when you look at this, we drove through the city, and like when you see the city, it's literally Volkswagen or VfL, and there's like you can drive through like where the stadium is, and then there's the old stadium, and then a bit further down it's where the youth academy is, where the young guys live and they play for Wolfsburg, and the pitches as well. So it's like a different training pitch for the youth academy than there is for the first team. But it's like basically, if I drew a walk Wolfsburg on a map, it'd be the weird bit in the middle, like kind of Innenstadt. There'd be a big bit of Volkswagen things, and then there'd be this side would all be VfL, and that's basically all it was.
Right, I'm starting to get the impression that it's actually painful for you to be describing the city lately.
I'm just trying to remember.
I actually like talking about it. Yeah. So probably move on to match day.
Before we jump into the city, I want to just mention one fact that Bob's just reminded me, which where I slept in my roommate's parents' flat house actually was a self-built bar which was covered in football scarves, which was very nice to see, very enjoyable. Unfortunately, Colin, there was no Air United on show. Surely there hasn't been a Wolfsburg Air United clash, but that was quite cool, you know.
Not yet.
Yeah, Champions League is beckoning for Air United once again, so that was kind of cool. Just another football term that wasn't to do with Wolfsburg, but that was in this Kleinstorf. There's a small village outside of Wolfsburg.
Okay, that's interesting. I certainly liked seeing the pictures of all the scarves. But match day, as I said, how was your experience? Talk me through it right from the start.
So we jumped on the train from, I actually can't remember where it was. It's near the little village of Isenbüttel. Very close by. I can't remember where the actual train, the name of the dorf next to it was, but we jumped on that train and got on, and first thing we saw was a flooding sea of Stuttgart fans on the
flooding sea.
So all the Stuttgart fans, they were obviously travelling up, so that was a bit weird. And I'd already had a kind of like ultras scarf, kind of, you know, the really thin, small scarves. I'd already had one and chucked that in my pocket, still on show. And it just felt really weird that I was pretending to be a Wolfsburg fan for the day. And I could tell that Stuttgart fans were looking at us going, I can't believe people that have actually got on the train with Wolfsburg. So that was interesting. Got into Wolfsburg, Hauptbahnhof, and again, it was only, you could only see Stuttgart fans. There was no Wolfsburg fans at all on show. Until we ended up making that walk to the stadium. But that walk to the stadium is also quite nice. So we got into the station and you walk through what is known as the Autostadt. So everyone always says like Wolfsburg's Autostadt, but there actually is an area called the Autostadt, which is like, I think there's like, it's kind of like a big massive leisure center, would you call it? And you can basically go look at cars, you can see history of cars, you can drive cars. I think you can actually like rent cars to drive around this big kind of like dirt track thing. My roommate was telling me about, I'm sure you give him a name, his name's Nick, and Nick would show me these like
friend of the pod, Nick.
Yeah, friend of the pod. That you could drive around and like kind of like car parkour, kind of, I don't know how else to describe it, like dirt roads kind of stuff, jumping off buildings and cars, that kind of stuff. So that's the, you walk through that and it's like there's a nice bridge, but just the views aren't very nice over this river. You walk through the Autostadt and then within like 10 minutes you're basically at the area where the Volkswagen Arena is, which I think when you do turn up there, you've both been there before, so like you'll understand what I mean. It's Robert has been there, so Robert will also understand what I mean. But it's also been, it's been built up really well, as it looks really sustainable, like for a modern football stadium, a modern part of the city. That it's got the women's stadium, which is really nice. It's got the training pitches, obviously the main stadium, and it's just, that's the whole VfL Wolfsburg is there in this part. So when you walk in, you go from walking into a town to walking into what feels like Wolfsburg led football club, just their own part of the city, which is kind of interesting compared to most other grounds in Germany as well. But no, it was nice walk to the stadium, really quick, and you can't really complain with that. Once we got there, you ended up seeing more Wolfsburg fans eventually, and we went straight to the shop just so I could grab myself a scarf, as I usually do on a away trip, my first time in the stadium. And then we went, which I didn't know where we were going, which above the fan shop, there's this like fan bar, which anyone can just walk in. You don't need to be a member, you don't need to be a season ticket or anything. You can just walk in, go upstairs, and you can get yourself a couple of beers and just drink. And it's actually quite a nice atmosphere. There's, again, like the pub's full of scarves of like Wolfsburg against any other team. Funny enough, the first scarf when I walked in was against Haswell, which is kind of weird, the first scarf that I noticed. And yeah, so that was nice. It was nice, big like middle part was just the bar and everyone else just standing around. It was reasonably busy. There's a outside kind of terrace part as well that you can go and sit and drink at. It was raining, so it wasn't as full, but you can imagine when it's a nice day, that's probably a nice place to go and chill before the game. So that was quite cool to see. I wasn't really expecting anything like that. So you can straight away you can tell that they care about the fans, and the community around the fans was really cool. And then came to entering the stadium, which gave us a little bit of bother because Nick had ordered the tickets. And because his QR code, he's forwarded my QR code to me by email, but Wolfsburg have picked up on this. So they've like voided his ticket because it looks like he's reselling the ticket. So my ticket worked. They don't know why my ticket worked, but my ticket let me in, but his ticket didn't let him in. So he had to go show the ticket office person that they was just, he forwarded the ticket. He didn't sell on or anything. Like I got through and he's just waiting. So he had to go get a paper ticket. Which actually was better because I don't know if you guys like, but I like having the ticket for the games, and now with QR codes and stuff, you don't really seem to get that anymore. And I know there's a lot of banners and there about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's actually a current issue. Maybe talk about that. What you think of a few, just for context. I've seen like Haswell fans, like Cool with the Cool and Dortmund game at the weekend. There's a lot of protests about it as well. Banners about print at home tickets only being available when. I mean, it brings up a lot of issues for mobile tickets as well, where physical tickets are often preferred for fans. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, obviously, completely agree with that. The first point being, as Roy mentioned, when moving house as well, I was looking at realised all of the sort of ticket stubs that I've got over the years, and especially over the past few years, especially in the past year, it's been pretty disappointing because, yeah, you're sort of, you've got loads of just A4 pieces of paper, which don't look particularly nice. And so I'm thinking about doing something for like a display, like cutting out the game or something. But yeah, so it's definitely, in terms of a ground hopping experience, it's good to have an actual ticket stub. And then also a big topic in Germany is always data protection. And that's something that ultras and fan groups are always big on. Because obviously with print at home tickets and that kind of thing, you usually have to have an online account where you put in your data, obviously your phone number and where you live and that kind of thing. and they're generally against that as well. And also because quite a lot of times, so for example, you spontaneously want to go to a game and then there's no possibility to get tickets in the away section or at the stadium at all, which just makes it all the more difficult for match going fans.
Yeah, so that was one nice part that I managed to get a physical ticket. So it was a bit disappointing to have the issue at the start. It was fine, we sorted it, but it was actually at the end, it was quite nice because then I've actually came away with a physical ticket. I can't remember the last time, apart from at standing on Pansenberg from Bremen as well, that I actually got a physical ticket.
I think it's a bit of an issue in Scottish football as well. I think since COVID, a lot of clubs have started selling tickets online only. Like I know Ayr do that. I think I've seen games like Partick away fans would have to buy tickets in advance if they wanted to go. There's just no way of turning up on the day and buying them, which doesn't really make sense for anyone. Doesn't make sense for the club because they're going to lose out on ticket sales. Alienates a lot of the older fan base that maybe don't have smartphones or can't work them. And I think that's partly the argument for the point of view of German fans as well. And I thought it was worth going into just because it seems to be an issue currently. Yeah, and I'm sort of similar to Robert, that of all the German games I've been to, I don't know, maybe not 90%, but not far off, are probably just printed home tickets, or I've just used them on the mobile, and it's just not as good having that as a souvenir.
Yeah, that's the thing. You lose that kind of
memorabilia.
Yeah, you lose that, and that was the one nice thing. So I'll jump back in with Wolfsburg if that's all right, just there. So we made our way in and, as always, go straight for the food and was very impressed, not going to lie, with the options of food that were there because, it was weird. They were all called, Volkswagen. So it was, Volkswagen currywurst and, Volkswagen pommes and stuff like that. So that must be an actual thing, Volkswagen made. So that was interesting. And I was starting to think, oh, no, this is going to be all kind of, Volkswagen and all kind of, as people say, it's just Volkswagen is the club and that's it. But that we get to that at the end, obviously, but it was the pommes were amazing. It was big thick pot. It wasn't your typical stadion pommes. It was the wee thin fries. It was this big thick kind of steakhouse pommes. Oh my god, it was amazing. Steakhouse pommes. Steakhouse fries. It was but it was also really fucking nice. And as always, as I as I do, I chucked a lot of Zenf on it. Had no issue with the Zenf pump, as Colin usually does, and clearly enjoyed that with a nice beer. And it was nice. Took my place in the Nord Kurva, and yeah, that was kind of the whole
before. I've got a question on this Zenf issue. Mustard, for people that don't know the translation, he puts mustard on his chips. When you get it, is it always a case of you applying it yourself, or is it? Has there ever been a time where you've had to ask for it?
No, I've always done it myself. I don't want to ask.
I wouldn't do that either. I think you probably they would probably think that you got the translation wrong.
I think the only place where that would have been a problem is the Leipzig derby, where the Leipzig ultras threw the bottle of mustard at the police officer. I think everywhere else you're allowed to put your own ketchup and mustard on your assorted wares.
So just as long as you don't have to approach the police for your passing your mustard back.
I tried not to. But so before the match experience was all really good. Got in the stadium and then it was a bit quiet because obviously we got tickets for the Kurva and where the ultras are and stuff like that. And it was a bit quiet before the game, not gonna lie. But it was full. That was the only place that was full. When you got in, that was the Kurva was full, but the rest of the stadium was completely empty. It looked like no one was coming, basically. Slowly get into the match, the bit filled up and they started singing, obviously. But it just took a bit of time for me, compared to other clubs who kind of start when the players come out and stuff. It wasn't as vocal at the start before the game, but... So I wouldn't say going into the game, I was getting really excited for the game because of the atmosphere. But once the game started, that's when the atmosphere basically came. But I would say before the game, the atmosphere, everything before was good. Just I would have preferred a bit more of hype from the fans. You know, sometimes you enjoy that part of the game because obviously there's nothing before it. So you're kind of just standing about, but see if the ultras are giving it something and you're involved and you're there, you feel a bit more anticipation.
Yeah, well, One of the best things about going to a game is when the opposition players come out and everybody starts whistling.
See, that didn't happen.
That's like one of my favourite things. Yeah.
It was really, Carl loves whistling to people. But that was just one of those things. I don't think they created a very good hostile atmosphere either for the away crowd. There wasn't a big following, and I did question that, but to be fair, Stuttgart is a bit of a distance from Wolfsburg, and they're also not doing very well, and it's a bit of a basement battle as well, so you can imagine not many travelling as much, but I thought there would have been more than it filled the away end. It filled up enough. I think it was 24,000 in the end, but it did look quite empty, the stadium, unfortunately.
Yeah, you noticed that. I think it's probably the worst ground in the Bundesliga on TV, like the TV pictures, because across from the camera, it's those like leather seats that are always 90% empty, and yeah, it just looks terrible. For some reason, occasionally when I've seen them, like maybe in the cup and other competitions, the camera's at the other side and it looks a lot better because you can see their way end and like the main stand, the one across the main stand, which looks a bit more full. But it doesn't always look the best. But I'd imagine because you were in the end behind the goal, that was probably made the experience slightly better rather than being surrounded by empty seats.
It made it better, but also, I don't know how you guys feel, but when you're in a specific stadium, so like when I went to Duisburg, yeah, I was in the Kurve there as well, and then the rest of the stadium was completely empty, and it just kind of looks shit from the outside. Like, it's sometimes just nicer looking at the ultras than being in with the ultras, I find. Sometimes it just kind of makes the atmosphere a bit nicer, even though you're maybe in the emptier stand, but like as well, nothing came from the other three sides. Like, you could hardly hear the Stuttgart fans. They weren't that vocal either. I was quite disappointed with them as away fans, actually. And that's the first time I've seen them. But they didn't really bring much, I would say. But once we got, like, I don't want to completely downgrade the fan base because I'm going to say nice things about them by the end. But, like, it was just before the game. I wanted a bit more anticipation and a bit more hype around the game, definitely. But that came once the game started and I learned a few new songs.
So, the game then, how did it go?
I didn't really enjoy it. Like when I posted about it on the podcast, like I said, it was probably the worst 5-goal game I've ever seen. And then a Stuttgart fan replied saying that it wasn't that bad. But like maybe sometimes you don't see the game as in depth when you're in the stadium as you do watching on TV as well, because you're not concentrated on every second because you're always like looking at the fans or singing along with the fans or something like that. So maybe it's a lot better. Maybe I need to look back at it, but I had no anticipation to look back at it either. I was thinking it was good, but like obviously there's 5 goals, but none of the goals were that great. They're all kind of apart, like they're all mistakes. Basically, most of them. There was one really good, one decent goal from Stuttgart's point of view. Wolfsburg's goals weren't that great, in my opinion. Maxi Arnold hit one from like 30 yards, and Müller's just pushed it in. I didn't realize until we saw it back in the screen in the stadium at halftime. I didn't realize how central he was, like because I was behind it at an angle, so it looked a bit more to the side. So, but the game was okay. But the fans were actually really decent once you got into it. The one, like, I was singing, I was like getting the songs and singing along and stuff like that, pretending I was a Wolfsburg fan. I didn't want it to look like I was, coming in, not knowing anything, thought I'd take part in stuff like that. And I was standing next to 3 Wolfsburg fans two that I'd met, that knew Nick as well. So I was kind of involved. It was nicer than just going as a independent person and not knowing anything. It was nice not to be with people and feel a bit more integrated. So I would say that the songs and stuff like that were good. The only issue with I found was that they repeated it far too long, that it kind of died really quickly. That there was 3 capos, there was 1 main cap and then with the actual speakers, and there was 2 with microphones or mega speakers, megaphones. And either side they were kind of trying to keep it going, and it took so many times they had to come back and say, nah, come on, louder, louder, let's keep it going. And I don't know if it's just a lack of a very small songbook, or it's just that was just what they planned for that day. But it kept going. It was nice at the start and everyone was singing, but maybe like 5 minutes into it, everyone was like, nah, I'm kind of fed up with this song. Maybe we should start a new one. And once the new song started, the atmosphere built again and it was really good. So it was decent in that sense. Sorry.
So in terms of that, like, you sort of get from that the impression that the actual core, the hardcore, is quite small, because you see that with the away supports that they get. You'd imagine teams with a bigger core support get more away followings, but then the home games that they go to, there's maybe a lot more casual fans that are just maybe along for the day. Do you get that impression? Or do you think they are really important to the community?
No, they are. I think 100% you can see that. And even when I was speaking to my roommate's dad, you can see how much the club meant to him. He's been following them since Oberliga times, since he was young and they were in the Oberliga and things like that. He's seen them, and he actually said quite a few things to me about Wolfsburg, because obviously we all know they do get a weird reputation for being terrible fans, terrible city. They don't really turn up, just the Altostadt is just Volkswagen, but there's a couple of things he said to me that kind of made me think again. He said, look at it, they were founded 3 years before FC Köln. Best FC Köln are a complete traditions Verein. There's no question about it. If you ask traditions Verein, you include the FC Köln, but Wolfsburg were founded before that. And they weren't a merger or anything FC Köln was. HSV was also a merger, but their traditions Verein, things like that. There's a lot of things that go against Wolfsburg. And the other thing that I liked, they said, that I may get this wrong because I can't remember if it's the percentage or the money that's put in, but Aldi put more money or have a more higher percentage in Bayern Munich than Volkswagen do in Wolfsburg. I think it's money, because I think Volkswagen are 49%, the complete 49% of Wolfsburg, but they put more money into Bayern than Volkswagen actually did to Wolfsburg. And he actually works with Volkswagen, funnily enough. So that's probably why he knows this information. So I think it's one of those things that you always hear things about a club and you just conform to that idea that that's what it is. But see, once you actually speak to a fan and someone who's actually dedicated to the club and goes all the time, things like that, you do hear different sides to it. So it kind of made me be a bit more sympathetic towards the club as well, because it wasn't a bad experience when I was there. It was nice. They won. The fans were good. I actually enjoyed the fans. Just they could have been a bit better. But I'm not going to go and say the fans were shit. The stadium was shit. The experience was shit. But also just hearing that from an actual fan. It's interesting. It gives you a different mindset, because obviously a lot of people have that opinion. And there's also other clubs and stuff like Ingolstadt are meant to be Altostadt as well, and only Aldi, things like that. But if you look at it, Bayern do take a lot of money from other consortiums. They take money from Qatar, they take money from Aldi and things like that for them to run. Volkswagen, I've supported Wolfsburg the whole way, of course, but that's the club and that's the community. That's where it's kind of came from. So I kind of like that idea now. I don't look at it as bad.
Criticism that they are exempt from 50+1, similar to Leverkusen.
Yes, that's where most of
the criticism comes in as that sort of corporate reputation. But I would say their origins feel more pure than Leipzig, because they were founded in 1945. Did you say?
Yeah, they were. Isn't really
too much long after the site itself was built. I think it was only built in about the 30s. It's a workers club similar to Leverkusen, so because of that I feel like it feels a bit more organic than Leipzig or even Hoffenheim, that have just sort of shot up through the leagues, from the amateur leagues, with money and not really much behind them. But at least Wolfsburg, there seems to be more of a community behind it, because pretty much all the fans work for the same company. It probably fosters more of a unity between the support, rather than just people turning up because they're in the Bundesliga. I don't know.
100%.
I feel them and Leverkusen compared to Leipzig and Hoffenheim, they aren't the same, I don't think.
Yeah, but they also brought a lot to the league. When they were doing really well and they were winning the league, they brought a lot to the league. It wasn't just it's a community and a fan base, and I don't know. I just liked in the end. I actually quite enjoyed the experience and gave me. I'm not going to say I'm a big massive Wolfsburg fan. I think they're the best club ever, or the best run club ever. They're probably not, but I'm not going to have all this kind of like, oh no, Wolfsburg is Volkswagen, it's Autostadt kind of thing now. It's like, sometimes it gives you a bit of a different perspective on things, and it's nice to see that. And so that's why I enjoyed, like, I kind of always wanted to go to Wolfsburg with them, because it would make it more a realistic experience rather than us going and being like, ah, there's nothing to do here, let's just go home, like, kind of thing after the game. Like, you know, so that was a nice part. I think that was the best way to actually experience it. It was good. All in all, it was very good.
Something I've always been interested, like, no matter how successful Wolfsburg are, they're still treated as, I know, they're still treated as almost lesser than Braunschweig and Hanover, who consider themselves like the main Niedersachsen derby.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Wolfsburg are the third.
That was the thing that I was going to mention as well. Like, the fans from about the 65th minute, they decided that they were just going to sing songs about Braunschweig for the rest of the game, because obviously they're playing them in the Pokal in a couple of weeks' time. And it's just like, well, we're not going to sing about Wolfsburg anymore. We're just going to only sing about Braunschweig, obviously about hating them and things like that. But there was just so many. I heard more Eintracht than I heard VfL for like the good last half hour of the game. And it's a weird thing German clubs do when they sing about their rivals, because they mention their names and stuff like that. And like, it's not always in the worst context the way they sing it. So like, if you don't understand fully, you might think they're singing about that team. So it's a bit strange. So like, for the last half an hour, the capo was very determined to get them singing about Braunschweig and how they're going to beat them and how much they hate them. So that rivalry is completely there. I wasn't sure I don't know what the Braunschweig fans are like, because obviously they've got Hanover. I don't know if like Wolfsburg look at Braunschweig and go, ah, we hate you, and Braunschweig go, who are you? We don't like Hanover, and Hanover don't like us. So it was nice to see that they actually had some sort of passion about that as well. So that Pokal game could be quite special actually for both sets of fans as well.
Maybe a bit of a Leverkusen situation, that Leverkusen hate Köln, but Köln have sort of bigger fish to fry in that area, let's say.
I think it is. I think it's a pretty real rivalry. Yeah, I think Braunschweig would see Hanover as their bigger rivals, but it's definitely big rivalry. Also, because I watched a video recently, like there's quite a lot of trouble. So they played each other in the relegation playoff in 2017-18 season, I think. So yeah, there's definitely, I think there definitely is a rivalry there. Yeah.
To close off our Wolfsburg discussion, what about some quick ratings? Just very, very briefly, what about the atmosphere? If you had to grade out of 10?
Difficult, because at parts it was a good 8, and parts it would have been a good... I'm going to do that again, you dick. It's difficult to say, like, parts of it, it's like an 8, and then sometimes it's kind of, like I said, it died, and like it took a while to get the ultras kind of going again. I'll give it a 6.5.
6.5 for the atmosphere then.
Yeah.
What about the game itself?
5
goal game and only 5 out of 10.
It just wasn't that good, and it wasn't good. One star for each goal. Wasn't a good game, wasn't that good of goals. 1 star each goal.
And food and drink, I'd imagine, scores slightly higher.
I'd give that a good 8.5. I think beer was decent, could have been better. I think I can't remember what beer it was actually, but
8.5 ratings. Not a fan of these 5.5.
Well, it's not good
ratings.
Enough to be a 9, and it's not bad enough to be an 8. So 8.5.
I think Colin was aware where 8.5 is, like.
I know why you're saying that. I feel like you need to be more decisive.
Exactly.
I think it stems from a lack of decisiveness. Just think about that next time. Think about that when you travel to, I don't know, what your next corporate Autostadt club you're going to as Ingolstadt. Think about that when you rate the Ingolstadt atmosphere. Right. Okay, so I'd say cumulatively that score is pretty low in our
city.
City
distances.
All right, go on then. Go on then. City.
For that, I'd chuck up to a 4 just because it's like a decent walk and close walk, but the city's pretty miserable. So 4. I think Robert's thinking that's too high.
No, I don't remember this being a category. I think you just made up a category.
We did it last week.
Yeah, I was slightly confused. I think like was stadium was a rating itself. Yeah. But then stadium maybe incorporated the distance travelled.
Wolfsburg's
because my Gladbach rating was definitely hampered by the distance from the city centre. So what about the ground itself? I mean, go on.
Six.
Okay, six. Fair play. So the stadium itself sort of brings up the rating higher. Right. That I think closes off this Wolfsburg chat. It's been delightful. That's another thing. I really, really, really hate their goal music.
Yeah, I think it was that bad. What's the goal music again?
Ramallah Ding Dong. I think with Ramallah Ding Dong song.
No, I don't think I do. I think you need to sing it for us.
No. Moving on. To different matters now, concerning German fanzine, and this is the second segment of the episode, so I'm gonna hand over to Bob here, as I know very little about the subject that we're about to discuss. Something about Holstein Kiel, I believe.
Yeah, thank you very much, Colin. Yeah, no, I just my most viewed site at work is Fascination Vancouver, which I'm sure will be fairly well known to the listeners of the pod. If not, then get on over there. It's basically just a roundup of news from fan culture, mainly in Germany, also international fan culture, but yeah, mainly with a focus on Germany. And I enjoy that as a nice little post-lunch perusal, see what's happening in the world of German fan culture. And yeah, it was just an interesting article, well, interesting happenings in the northern city of Kiel over the past few weeks. Because I'm sure, as Roy remembers from the exciting/thrilling 3-2 win for HSV in Kiel at the beginning of September, the Kiel fans set off a lot of pyrotechnic, a lot of flares, and so I don't think the actual fine from the DFB has arrived yet, but because of how many flares they let off, they think the fine is going to be about €36,000, which is obviously quite a lot of money for a club of Kiel size. And basically this was sort of the end of the line for the Kiel executive board. And the president said he'd had enough with the fan scene, especially with the ultras. So there were multiple punishments that were exacted on the fans. For example, some of the fans were basically asked to rat each other out to say who it was who'd let off the flares, and they'd be sort of receive a stadium ban, or they'd be asked to pay some of the fine. The ultra scene had also the ultra groups had also received some car parking space next to the Westtribüne, which is where the sort of standing section is in Kiel. The photo accreditations were taken away. They have a container where they keep a lot of their materials and flags and stuff like that, and they're not allowed to use that anymore. They're not allowed to hand out their flyers or have an info stand, which is right behind one of the stands. And also, perhaps also more importantly, one of the partners of the club has also refused the fan groups to be able to use their cars and people carriers and stuff like that to travel to away games. And yeah, so obviously quite a lot of hefty sanctions that the executive board or the club president and the vice president are taking against the active fan groups. And yeah, so the Kiel fan groups, they had their most recent game against Hansa Rostock on Saturday, and the game kicked off at 1 o'clock, and a minute or so after kickoff, all of the ultras and the active fan groups left the stadium because they decided that this is a step too far. and they won't be going to any more games, home or away, until something happens. Something happens at the club. Yeah, and I think they're not disappointed about how it's as much of an overreaction from the presidential board, but also that the president Stefan Schneeklot, very good German name. He's never talked to the fans. He's only ever talked through the Kieler Nachrichten, who are the sort of the main, which is the main newspaper in Kiel. He's never actually talked directly to the fans. It happened through the media or through the fan liaison officers. And yeah, I think they just feel like a lot of ultra groups in Germany do, that they're used by the club when it suits them, when it suits them for marketing and that kind of thing. But they're trying to push them too far, and they want the Kiel fans, with the other Kiel fans and the executive board and the players and the manager, to realise how important the active fan groups are and how the atmosphere won't be as good without them.
Yeah, it wasn't something I was aware of until you mentioned it. You'd imagine that would hurt Kiel quite a lot, because they're one of the smaller clubs in the second division in terms of crowds, especially if they're not going to away games. You know, Kiel get pretty small away crowds, particularly when they have to travel long distances, like down to Bavaria and stuff. So I think that would affect the support quite a bit. There is two sides to the argument. You can understand slightly, like, it is costly for clubs like that. Clubs in the Zweite Liga don't have a lot of money, so having to pay fines like that will harm them financially, but it does seem a slight overreaction. Like, all those measures taken, it's just going to alienate, like, a really important section of the fan base. So I'd be interested to see how long it carries on and whether it can be, like, sorted quickly. I don't know what you think.
That's the biggest thing for me that I took from it, is that they've just completely sanctioned the fans without, maybe like you said, Bob, there was no actual conversation with them. I just feel like there's obviously a bit of separation between the ultras and the club, but there's also a lot of unity between the ultras and the club, and you kind of want them to feel that they're not going, especially a club like Kiel, when it's meant to be a community-based club, and it's not this big, massive club. There's not that many fans actually go. You think it'd be easier for them to organise and sort that kind of situation out and say, like, you need to go by what we're saying. Like, obviously, every fan base uses pyro. Every fan base sets off fireworks, whatever, during the game. If you look on Kicker nearly every couple of days, there'll be a club that's getting a fine. Right? It's normal. But maybe there should have been a better way of going about it from the Holstein Kiel side of things, to not just completely alienate their fans and say, nah, look, you're doing this wrong. You're losing all these rights to being at the gate. If you want to come and support us, you have to do the way we want you to support us. And that's probably the worst thing, because the thing is, they're doing such a good job at making, okay, they are doing some of the things they're not allowed to do. They're doing such a good job at creating an atmosphere at a small club in a small town. And, like, I remember watching them when they were getting absolutely pummeled 7-2 by Paderborn this season, the follow was really good that day. And the fans looked like, apart from when they were conceding all 7 goals, their fans were kind of giving all things like that. So it's nice to see that they're building something. Even when they were at Haasfar, when you guys were there, I thought they were quite a decent support as well then, considering the COVID restrictions that are in place. You just don't want to see a club like that losing out on these things, because they're trying to be too good. Like, they're trying to be too good. Every club in Germany does this. They don't need to be so, like, now we're following the rules 100%, and that's us. Like, if every club followed that, you wouldn't have the great fan base that you have in Germany.
And I think that it will only have to end one way. It only can end one way, because I think it has to come from the club coming back on their actions to sanction the supporters, because you can see how principled German ultras tend to be. Like, with the COVID situation, the entry regulations, a lot of ultra groups boycotted that for quite a period. I mean, there's full stadiums, like, maybe this point last year, but because of a lot of the clubs had, like, 2G, 3G rules in place, a lot of the ultra groups didn't come. they definitely are. They definitely take principles very seriously, and that they're not afraid to double down on that. I think it's very different to the UK, where like I think there's more of an easygoing attitude to that, things like this. You know, there's probably like similar to, you know, the example that comes to mind is like the Super League thing. You know, there's outroar fans calling for like 50+1, like Man United fans, Liverpool fans, or whatever. But you only heard about that for a very, very short period of time. It was very like reactionary, short-lived. But I feel like German fans are far more likely to stick to their principles and beliefs. And without the club like sort of backtracking on what they've done and apologising, I don't really see the Kiel fans backing down from their position. I was going to say something.
I think that's part of the reason why I picked up on the story as well. Like you say, it really does frustrate me a lot of the time, especially with English football, how, like you say, fans just don't really seem to care or fight or want to fight for their rights. I think a lot of the time in England, I think you do get out to an extent in Germany, because I was looking at some of the Facebook comments when this is called Block 501 is the name of the group of the fan groups as a whole. And when you look at the Facebook comments, some of them are from people being like, oh, well, you shouldn't be able to go back into the stadium when you've paid the €36,000 fine and that kind of thing. And yeah, there definitely are people like that in Germany. But I think that's also why I wanted to highlight it, is because also I really do think, because, yeah, I went to the Holsteinstadion in April myself and really enjoyed myself. So it was quite a nice atmosphere, quite welcoming. But also without the ultras, as we witnessed during the period of COVID, and like you say, when the ultras weren't there, is the atmosphere just isn't the same. And it is then quite similar to what you get in the UK. And so, yeah, like you said, I think it's good that they're standing up for what they believe in, and sort of adding to Roy's point, if you did it at a club like HSV, when you took out maybe one of the fan groups, it wouldn't make such a big difference. But like you say, I think, especially for away games, that'll make such a big difference, because there's about 300 or 400 of them who go to pretty much every game, and without them, you haven't got a huge amount left. So
yeah. I think just culturally, like within like ultra fanzines and everything, like you're saying, like Roy was saying, like there's always flares, there's always pyrotechnics, and clubs get fined all the time. But you would question, from that, like surely the clubs would do more to sort of combat that, like have stricter searches in the ultras block. But it's almost because of the way the culture is and how ingrained it is within the fan scene. Like it's almost easier for the clubs to like sort of look the other way and ignore the issue, just pay the fine and not really punish the support, because it's almost like no other club are doing it. So when individual clubs do it and take harsher measures against the support, that sticks out, because it's not really the done thing, and it's just going to lead to backlash, which leads to fan groups not turning up, which for Kiel, as you say, makes a much bigger impact and a detrimental effect on atmosphere and attendances. So it's definitely in the club's best interest to really get them back on side, I would say. Further news in the sort of German fan scene space, which maybe didn't make it fully across to the UK, was the news about Hertha and their investor Lars Windhorst, which is probably another case of the club becoming distant from its fan base. But I think there's a deeper story if you've been paying attention for the last couple of weeks, which I probably am not as well informed as the boys living over in Germany, so it's probably best that they explain it.
I think we did the episode about Hertha in March or April, I think. And mm-hmm. That's obviously, if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. That's a nice little plug in there. But yeah, I'm not sure a lot has changed, in that Kai Bernstein, who used to be an ultra with the Harlequins group in Hertha, has become the club's president. He has replaced a man called Gegenbauer. And there were some revelations last week, which were actually revealed by the Financial Times. Also, because Lars Windhorst is quite a big figure in the, I don't know, financial circles. I'm not exactly sure what he's invested in or what he does financially. His company, Tenor Holdings AG, is quite big in the in financial circles. And that's the one that had controlling rights of HertaBSC. And it was revealed last week by the Financial Times that Lars Windhorst had he'd asked an Israeli private investigators to spy on Gegenbauer, the old president of Herta, and to sort of produce fake news about him and bad articles and basically to try and ruin his reputation. The reason this has come out is because Windhorst hasn't actually paid these Israeli private investigators. Apparently he promised them €3 million or something, and he's only paid them one. So they still owe €2 million, which also, I mean, €3 million for that kind of campaign firstly seems like a lot of money. But yeah, and so that's what came out last week. There was also some big protests by a lot of the Hertha fan groups during their game against Hoffenheim at the weekend, where they again asked for Windhorst to leave their club. And today, just before we went to air, Windhorst posted on his Facebook page, which is where he generally does a lot of his communications, a bit of a red flag if you ask me in the first place. And he said that him and Tenor Holdings were going to sell their shares in back to Hertha. In his statement, he said it was mainly due to a lack of communication from Kai Bernstein and all the people from Hertha, how even though Tenor Holdings have control of the rights to Hertha, they hadn't been asked about a lot of the big decisions and that kind of thing. I think it's also because of the difficulties he's faced. As we mentioned in the episode in March and April, he, even though he's seen as like a big fish in the financial world, he's been bankrupt once or twice already, not actually as good as he claims to be. So my idea might be that he needs a bit of money to from selling his shares. But again, it proves again firstly that investors in football club are pretty much always a bad idea, and the power of fan action, firstly fans being in crucial positions in clubs and also the fans in the stands protesting against them. And yeah, I think it's good news for Hertha, good news for German football, bad news for Lars Windhorst.
What is it about Hertha and Facebook? Did Jürgen Klinsmann not announce his resignation via Facebook?
Does it?
An odd one. Actually, remembered. I was gonna bring this up during our Keel conversation, but I suppose it's quite relevant, and it shows the impact that a bad relationship between the fans and the club can create. Like Hanover, I think, as an example, with Martin Kind, who has been a long proponent for abolishing 50+1, and like that fan base has been fractured for years now.
With the man next to me, also you got Wüstefeld at HSV as well, buying a few shares in HSV and then bringing nothing but chaos for the past year or so, and then he's resigned or was pushed out this week. So yeah, I think there's just so many examples in recent years in German football where you can see how investors are bad. GFP.
Yeah, and at least stuff like that, like the Hamburg thing, I didn't even know about, like the sort of finer details that I probably missed just being in the UK. But Hanover is one of the probably more well documented scenarios, and it's a case where like it shows how much damage you can do when club and fans have got like a totally different mindset. But I suppose Hertha are back on the right track now with like Kai Bernstein being the president, former ultra himself. He's going to be far more in tune with the actual fan groups, which is really important. Like pretty much the conclusion that we can draw from these news stories, that the clubs have got to listen to the fans and engage with them as well.
But Lars Windhorst did Catherine Zeta Jones into a Hertha fan, so that's good.
There's perks and everything.
Is that true?
Yeah, one of his Facebook posts was like him and what's her husband? Like Michael Douglas something.
I don't know.
Some big Hollywood star. And he like posted a picture on Facebook of them on a yacht, like watching the Hertha Dortmund game or something, being like, yeah, Catherine Zeta chose the as a Dortmund fan now. this is a bit for Patreon. Yeah.
I mean, I do remember saying at the start of the season that I hoped Hertha would do a bit better this season, just even to prove us right, sort of like our viewpoint that the better route to go down is the fan power side of things rather than just investment and bringing investors, spending loads of money, because it really hasn't worked for Hertha and it's not worked for a lot of other clubs. So the more these situations turn into failures is probably a better thing for German football in the long run, I think, because it feels like, it's felt like for the past few years it's been quite a bit of a crossroads between these two paths, so that's good to see. I think that probably ties up our episode. It feels like a bit of a shorter one. We'll see. Roy said at the start that this could be a shorter one, which usually doesn't turn out to be the case, but I feel like this one has. So we'll just close off the note. But thanks everyone for listening, for tuning in, and thanks to Bob and Roy, as always, for their insights.
No worries.
Hopefully we'll be back. Good. Hopefully we'll be back. Even what he said. Hopefully we'll be back soon with some more Groundhoppen and some more German stories from the football world. But we'll see you then.
Keep GFPing.
Cheers.
GFP.